Hello, and welcome to the ADHD Manual Podcast. My name is Abby Chow. I'm a marriage and family therapist, an ADHD certified clinical services provider, and a proud ADHDer. This is a podcast for people with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder and those who love us, which covers pretty much everybody. Growing up with a colorful brain in a black and white world can make us feel like aliens. The manual we were given to guide us through life doesn't have any diagrams of the parts we have. I've decided to stop throwing away my parts and start throwing away this useless manual to write my own. So kick off your shoes, have a seat, and take a break from fitting yourself into a mold that's not your shape. You belong here. Allies, welcome to the ADHD planet. ADHDers, welcome home. Hello. Hello, everyone. Welcome to a very special time. I don't know if you know what tomorrow is, March 5th. It is the ADHD Manual Podcast birthday. The podversary, if you will. I can't believe it has been a year. That does not feel right. I feel like I just started. And also that I've been doing it forever. I wish that it was a better number than episode 19. It's kind of an ugly number, right? But I did switch up the frequency somewhere down the line there. So that's okay. But yeah, I just thought today could be a nice, like, reflective episode, and I took some time to really think about what I've learned over the past year, besides all the pandemic lessons of, like, it's very hard to be in your house all the time, and our country's infrastructure is crumbling, etc. So besides those lessons, I've just been thinking about what are the things about myself, what are the things about ADHD that I've learned, and to just take a second to, yeah, just be grateful that I'm here a year later. I think maybe other people could relate to this when I say that maintaining projects is not a strength of mine. And kind of keeping it up and not letting the decline in interest as things become less new translate to dropping projects. So I think it's pretty cool that I've been doing this for a year, and I think for the most part I'm pretty sure that I have stuck to my committed release schedule. And you know what? Don't correct me if I'm wrong. I'm going to say that I have maintained a year of upholding my commitment. And that's something to be proud of, I think. I think I can be really proud of this. Yeah, I thought I would share some lessons, and then I also just thought it'd be kind of cool to maybe go over some of the statistics, you know, from the last year of my podcast and how that's been going, like what my most popular episodes are, and how many listeners we've got and from where, and things like that. So I thought that would be kind of cute, and to check in on you all, and thank you, obviously, for sticking with me. So, to date, over the last year, my Buzzsprout statistics say that this podcast has received 4,264 downloads. Not terrible. Thank you. Thank you for all who have downloaded. It's very exciting. So, it's more than one listener per episode, and I think that's pretty cool. I've had listeners from 53 different countries and 769 cities, most of them in the United States, but a lot in Canada and the UK and Australia, and even Germany and the Netherlands. My four most popular episodes all with over 300 downloads a piece. Our so the fourth most popular is the Ask Abby ADHD versus Anxiety episode I put out in January, episode 16. And then above that is the very first episode, Ask Abby How to Factory Reset Your Life. That's exciting. And then episode 15 is above that, ADHD in the Office. That is wonderful. If you're listening to this and you love The Office and you love ADHD, then join my Office ADHD fan club on Facebook. And then the most popular episode with 370 downloads is from December, episode 14, You Are Entering the No Time Zone. Wow, I don't know if I would have said that was the most popular. I don't know if I would have called that. But I'm glad. I think that does make me feel a little comforted, just because time blindness is just the thing that is the most impairing of my ADHD, and I really, really struggle with it. And I think there's a lot of shame around, you know, struggling with time and time management, and good time management is always seen as like this pinnacle of like adulthood, right? So it's nice to see that maybe other people can relate to that as well, that struggle. So thank you all for listening to those. I did get so on my Spotify stats, I can even tell what kind of music you're listening to. Isn't that creepy? And yeah, things like age and gender, and that's wild. But in case you're curious, the artist that you all seem to be listening to the most is Ariana Grande, Taylor Swift, Lady Gaga, Ed Sheeran, and Miley Cyrus. I approve. You know, those are great choices. I do have a bit of a grudge against Ed Sheeran, even though his music is extremely catchy. But there was, a few years ago, he won a Grammy over Kesha for, so his Shape of You song won over Kesha's, Praying song, and I thought that was just outrageous, and I pretty much love Kesha more than most things, so that's hard to get over. And he wasn't even there to accept the award. Anyway, I'm getting off track, but I don't hate you if you like Ed Sheeran. It's very catchy, and he is talented. But Kesha's better. Anyway, so, yeah, those are some stats. Hi, everyone. It's fun to know a little bit about who you are and where you come from and what kind of music you like. But yeah, I think if the numbers weren't like this, and if I couldn't see how many people are listening and where you all are from, and really get a picture of who you are, I don't think I could have maintained it for this long. So thank you. And in other words, thank you, because you are listening. That is keeping me going, and having a project like this that I have worked very hard on and maintained for a year now is important to me, and is important to my my growth as a, you know, as a person and as an ADHDer. So thank you. So what have I learned over this past year of podcasting? I think I have sort of learned how to use GarageBand. I think that there are less late nights when I am screaming at my computer, "Why did you delete that?" Or, "Where did this clip go?" So I think I have a little less moments like that. So I must have gotten a little bit better. I learned I hate Audacity. I mean, I don't know. I'm sure that there are, like, really techie ADHDers out there who just love Audacity because it's so customizable, and I'm sure that that's really appealing and useful, but it was way too confusing for me. I would have had to take an entire class on how to use it because it was, yeah, there was just a lot of buttons that just had no explanation whatsoever, and I need a lot of explanation. I've learned that when I started releasing episodes more frequently, so every other week instead of every month, I think that helped some of my high pressure procrastination. I think just like putting it out more often, maybe it took less pressure off of making it perfect. You know, like this is my only episode of the month. It has to be pristine. So I think I got a little bit better at that over time. And, I still have moments where I stay up until 4 a.m., but I think they're much less now versus, like, literally every month. So I think that's an improvement, something I've learned, is to just keep doing it, try to accept done over perfect, and yeah. So I hope maybe someday that I can maybe get it out to even more frequent, like every week or something. I'm working up to that. So other stuff that I've learned, maybe not directly from the podcast, but just over my own general ADHD-related growth over the past year and getting into some really good therapy. I think a lot of what I've learned over the past year has been, like, really the past, time. Like five or six months. Because I got a really great therapist. And she's awesome. So I think I have learned a lot in my work with her. That I'll get to in a second. But, oh, I think one thing that I have learned that kind of the pandemic has, like, indirectly taught me is, okay, so I always thought that I just don't have a sleep schedule. Like, getting to sleep at an early hour and getting up at an early hour has always been just, like, I don't know what's really challenging. The Iliad? There are a lot of challenges in that? I don't know. But it has always taken so much effort. And it's always been something that has just never, ever come naturally to me. And so, like, if I would have times when I could sleep, go to sleep naturally and then wake up naturally, I would just always stay up way too late and then sleep until the afternoon. So I always thought that I just didn't have a sleep schedule, and that it was always something that I would have to work at. But I think through the pandemic and just, like, working from home and having a little more time in the morning to, you know, cutting down on that commute time. And I think I have learned that I actually do kind of have a sleep schedule. It's just a few hours off of the rest of the world, it feels like. Or, like, the rest of the, you know, just business and corporate world operates, right? Like, man, businesses love to schedule meetings, like, right at 9 a.m. and trainings, and I don't get that. But, so I think, like, my general sleep schedule is, like, going to sleep around 1 or 2 a.m., and then usually, like, waking up fully around, like, 10-ish. And I think that just working from home so much has given me a chance to kind of discover that. And I'm not really sure what I'm going to do with that information post-pandemic. I don't know if I can really shift my life to accommodate that. Maybe I could try, but honestly, I'm having trouble comprehending anything post-pandemic right now. it's still feeling hard to like fathom what life is going to look like, you know? More seriously though, and kind of tied to that, especially over the past year when I have been treating a lot of ADHD in others and while simultaneously going through my own pretty ADHD specific treatment, I think one of the biggest things that I have learned, and I was just talking about this with a client the other day, is that, so ADHD treatment in general, and I think, like, you know, the way the medical field handles it and the way some people focus their own treatment, I see a lot of, like, focus on, like, skills, right, and behavior, and CBT, and just, you know, coping skills around, you know, organization and prioritization and time management and emotional regulation. So, I mean, those are important. Don't get me wrong. I think what I'm beginning to believe more and more is that actually ADHD treatment is much more about how to, like, one by one discard all these messages about myself that I've collected over the years than it is actual coping skills for ADHD symptoms. I think that there needs to be a much heavier emphasis on essentially the trauma of being neurodivergent in a neurotypical world than I think maybe at least that I realized early in my ADHD diagnosis and treatment. I think that that is something that has maybe surprised me as I've spent more time on it. Like, maybe ADHD treatment is much closer to trauma treatment than we might suspect, you know? I think, I just think about, like, all of the time in my own therapy and, like, in the therapy I give others, like, how much time we spend just recognizing and naming all the damage that the neurotypical world has done to us. I think we spend so much, we end up spending so much more time on that than actually, like, you know, learning how to, you know, use a planner. You know, I just think that it is much heavier and more essential and harder work than we give credit for. So it's almost like I'm just, like, picking through, I don't know, this suitcase I've carried around for my whole life and, like, picking up all of these messages and perceptions of myself that I've just been carrying all of these years without realizing why or where they come from or if they're true or useful. And I'm finding that a lot of them have to do with how difficult it is to have a brain like mine in a world like ours, right? So, you know, like, messages like, you know, just all this shame at, like, I can't keep up and I'm weak, I'm lazy, I'm too much, I'm bad at friendship, I'm toxic, I'm hard to love, I'm frightening, I'm weird, I'm abnormal. Like, all of these things that I have been carrying that were directly related to how I've been experiencing the world for this long, and especially how long I've been experiencing the world without the appropriate language to name it. So, like, in that way, I do see this as, like, kind of relating to the sleep schedule of just, I might have talked about this in a past episode, but a huge part of my own work that I'm doing right now, I don't remember if I've talked about this already, but a big maybe impetus for my seeking the therapist I have now at this stage of my life is for some medical related trauma that a lot of the pandemic had been bringing up. And so this is why my therapist is awesome, because I went in there with that. And then the more we've been working together, the more I'm realizing that what's actually going on and what actually I need to work on and work on healing is all of this trauma from growing up neurodivergent. And I kind of had this impression that it was because of this medical trauma that I've been feeling for the past few years, this kind of inability to trust my body, right? And to not have a good sense of my instinct. Like, what kind of symptoms do I have to just, you know, work on better, you know, taking care of myself and fixing myself versus what kind of symptoms need medical attention, that kind of thing. So a lot of my bad experience was around having something really serious going on and no, you know, out of the, you know, several hospitals I went to, no doctor took me seriously. So I had this impression that that was why, right? But the more we talked about it, the more I realized, oh, actually, I was never taught to trust my body and my instincts. Like, this is always something that has been an issue for me because of how often I was taught that my emotions were over the top. They were dramatic. I was overreacting. And I was taking things too personally. And I needed to work on my own anxiety and depression. And, you know, this was like a me problem. You know, that's kind of how I always, a lot of the messages I picked up over the years, by no one really in particular. But just this overall sense that what I was experiencing internally was not right. Like, there was something going on that other people couldn't understand and that was inappropriate and that I needed to fix, or in the case of like executive dysfunction, that I had to push past. You know, like, I think that's a big thing that keeps resurfacing, is that I was never, and I think I've talked about this because this is, it's, you know, it's one of those things that I've realized, you know, those things that like you learn, or like those epiphanies that hit you all of a sudden and then you like can't stop thinking and talking about it. So one of mine lately is like the realization that I never learned where my limit was. Like, my body's limit, my mind's limit. I never knew what tired was, or what a stopping point was, because I was just constantly forced to push past my limits and just work from a stage of continuous burnout. I never learned when to stop, you know, because my stopping point, what I felt was like, oh, I'm done, I'm tired, this is too much for me, I'm overwhelmed. Like, that point was always treated like way too early. And like, because I couldn't push past it, it was something wrong with my work ethic, or it was like just something that I had to push past. And it is like, I mean, again, I keep talking about this everywhere, but it's an embarrassingly recent realization that not everyone has to deplete the entirety of their energy resources with one task, like with washing the dishes, or with, you know, vacuuming. Oh, I hate vacuuming. Or like setting up a bank account or doing your taxes. Like, it was not, I literally thought that this is how everyone was. I really thought that, like, oh man, like, everyone is just, like these tasks are hard for everyone, and everyone has to just and everyone just feels like they want to die after they clean their room. Like, that's just how it is, and like I just have to toughen up. So it was just like this constant message I got of like, if I'm not completely dead at the end of some task, or when, if I'm not completely dead by the time someone else tells me I can stop, then I'm not trying hard enough, or I haven't tried my best. And I think, and maybe that's an overall cultural message as well, of like the, you know, the culture of overwork and productivity. It's essential to burn out and drive yourself to complete exhaustion, because if not, then you're not doing something right, you know? So it resulted in this kind of just continuous confusion about, I feel like I would always have these moments of like trying to gauge where other people were, and like trying to base my own stopping point off of other people's natural stopping points. I remember having a lot of moments where I would finish a test and then no one else would be done yet, and I would have this moment of terror of like, oh no, I haven't done this right. I've done something wrong. I have to go over it. And I would just keep going over and over and over a test, and I would never feel like I was done until I saw other people turning it in, and they'd be like, oh, okay, great. Like, now, like, this is when normal people stop working on their test, you know? So it was, I had a lot of moments where I didn't feel like good and competent and, you know, skilled or prepared. And that's why I finished tests early. It was always like, oh, something's not right with me. Like, my stopping point isn't accurate and I need to keep going. So I just had a lot of moments like that. And I think one of the things that I've learned about in the past year especially is that ADHD treatment is much more about becoming reacquainted with yourself and your body and your interests and your talents and weaknesses and instincts. You know, I feel like it's much more about that than it is about any kind of organizational system. You know, I think that there is so much more, so many more consequences to being neurodivergent. No, let me rephrase that. There are so many more consequences to surviving in a neurotypical world as a neurodivergent person. Because there's a lot of things I don't think that are direct consequences of neurodivergence. I think a lot of it comes from having to get by in this world that was so clearly not built for us, and a lot of time feels like people don't care about making it fit us. So yeah, so I think that is something that I've learned, is that it's a lot more about just getting to know myself and spending time, you know, figuring out my own sleep schedule. You know, like, maybe if I spent less energy forcing myself to go to bed at 11 p.m. And more energy, like, when do I get tired? And how can I, what are maybe some skills that I could use to actually go to bed when I am tired? Maybe there's more to how to adjust to my own natural rhythms than it is about spending all this time and effort trying to adapt myself to someone else's rhythms. I think, like, and that is a lot harder than it sounds. You would think that'd be like, you know, it would be an easy thing to be just be like, oh, like, toss it all out, you know, toss out all idea of a rational bedtime, you know, and just do whatever you want. You think that would be easy, But it's really difficult to know what to keep and what to get rid of. And, you know, getting acquainted with your body and learning how to feel your feelings and how to identify what you're feeling is a very difficult skill. Maybe a lot of neurodivergent people learned how to tell someone else's emotions instead of their own, you know, or learned how to memorize someone else's perception of what a normal feeling is rather than what are they actually feeling. So, yeah, and that's been a very rewarding work. I think another kind of unintentional, maybe blessing during this pandemic time is I've been doing yoga every week because one of my best childhood friends is on the East Coast and she teaches yoga, and I haven't been able to participate in her classes, but in the past year she's been doing it online, so I'm able to do that with her, and it's lovely. You know, I'm she's gonna be listening to this and laughing right now, because a few years ago back when I was living on the East Coast and we were working together, like, I was very anti-yoga because I was so tired of people telling me, like, just do yoga, it, like, is really helpful, you know, it'll really cure your depression, you know, like, I was so tired of hearing that. So I was very mean about it to my poor dear friend who is just passionate about yoga and wanted to share that with me. So, she has officially converted me. Take this as my confession of that. But I think that, it's really cool just to, that kind of in an exercise sense, but where I see yoga as being, more of getting reacquainted with my body. And I think, and something that I love about the way my friend teaches, and again, like, this is my only experience of yoga is her, so I don't know, I don't know how much of this is just, like, a her thing, and her just being incredible. I don't want to, like, you know, mislead other people into taking yoga classes that aren't this amazing, you know, I'd feel bad about that, so disclaimer about that. But I think what I really get out of it is that, she makes a real effort to remind us that we need to listen to our own body signals. And, like, if your body is resisting and is, if this hurts, if this, feels too hard, then don't do it, you know, or, like, or do this instead, or, put less pressure on this, you know, like, I found it very, very healing in a sense of, like, listening to my body and, allowing it to move and not move in the way that feels right. So that's definitely something that I have learned, is that it's, that maybe yoga can be less of a, you know, mental health cure-all and more of a, or like an exercise thing, and more of like an intimate, way that I can spend time with my body. So that's something I've learned, and it's been cool to kind of discover what my body can do. You know, I think it's, I've discovered that maybe parts of me are stronger than I realized, and, you know, what parts need more support and things like that. And, oh, and then I think one thing that, that can also be filed under my, embarrassingly recent, revelations is this idea of, trying to shed this perception that neurotypicals are just stronger than me, right? Like I said before about, like, this, oh, everyone's just burnt out. Like, neurotypical people can just handle it better than I can. Like, it's actually, like, really recent that I'm like, oh, like, maybe, and hear me out, but maybe neurotypical people aren't stronger than you. Maybe this is just literally easier for them. Like, I think that's definitely something I have learned, or maybe learned to embrace more over the past year. And I think part of it is pandemic living and having to be in the house all the time, and a lot of, so it's hard to even like have any kind of respite from all of the household chores that I wish I could do and I can't. So I think maybe that, like the past year has maybe brought that up some more. And actually, like recently, just a few nights ago, my wife was cleaning the kitchen and washing the dishes, and what felt like 10 minutes maybe after she started, and again, time doesn't exist to me, so who knows, but what felt like really fast after she started, I walked into the kitchen and everything was clean. You know, like all the dishes were clean, they were in the rack, like the counters were wiped down, like, and I just stood there, and I don't know. And I had just this moment where I said, like, wow, you did that so fast. Like, I can't believe how fast and easily you did that. And she was like, yeah, you know, I just get into a groove and I become a robot and I can just bang it out. And I'm like, whoa, I don't know what that's like. So it was sad. It was definitely like there was some parts of me that was like, wow, I really wish this kind of thing didn't feel so hard for me. But I also think that it maybe eased a little bit of the guilt that I feel around not contributing to caring for the apartment as much as I would like to, or as much as my wife does. You know, like, I think that I carry a lot of guilt over about just feeling like I'm, you know, like one of those sitcom husbands, like on like King of Queens or whatever, you know, like those ones that just like sit on the couch and are like, make me a sandwich, you know, like I sometimes feel like one of those sitcom husbands. And I think maybe this small thing was just kind of a wake-up call, because I think what I was, my perception was, again, like, everyone, this burns out everybody. Like, these kind of tasks are hard for everybody, but everyone else is able to just, like, roll their sleeves up and do it, and I can't, 'cause I'm lazy, etc. So I had this, almost, like, this perception that I didn't even realize I had of, like, I felt guilty because I thought, maybe I felt like I was forcing my wife to take on, you know, this extremely exhausting labor because I wasn't doing it. And because, like, because it's so much work for me and I couldn't bring myself to do it, then she was picking up all of this work and it was just really hard and, like, burning out for her. But, like, and I didn't even realize that I was looking at that. And I think that's part of why I feel so guilty. And I don't know if I've really talked to her about this yet. So we'll see what she says. She might be like, it's not easy. And I'm not saying it's easy. But it's just that sense of like she can wash the dishes and then, you know, like come sit on the couch and be, you know, and still have energy to, like, interact with me or to play a game with me or, you know, whatever. And that's completely foreign to me, you know. So, anyway, I think that that small thing of, like, oh, wait, like, neurotypicals say this is easy because it is easy for them. I think that is a lesson that is reverberating in my life in various ways. I'm looking forward to more of using these little discoveries as a way to just be kinder to myself. Or I hope that over the last year I have learned more about how to let go of some of the shame that I didn't realize I had. 'Cause no one has ever shamed themselves into being a better person. not how this works. So, in any case, I've been talking way too long. I appreciate each and every one of you for listening. Thank you so much for being on this journey with me for the past year. I look forward to, I was going to say more years, but that might overwhelm me. So I'm looking forward to a lot more episodes in the future, and I'm excited to keep learning and growing with you all. And yeah, go listen to some Ariana Grande or Taylor Swift. Live it up. All right, bye y'all. That's all for this episode, but there is plenty more at my website, theadhdmanual.com. That's theadhdmanual.com. You can find me on Facebook, Twitter, and Reddit at theadhdmanual. Do you have a question, comment, or story? Then I want to hear it. Email me at theadhdmanual@gmail.com. Very special thank you to my brother, Joe Miner, for composing this theme music, and thank you so much for listening. And remember to be kind to yourself. See you next time.